Hello, and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway, and I'm taking a look at the myths and legends of the world and looking for inspiration that we can use in fantasy role-playing games. Normally, episodes of Patron Deities go out to everyone who subscribes to the Monster Man Patreon at the $2 level and above, but this is a bit of an unusual episode. I know, if you are a regular Patron Deities listener, that I said that the next episode was going to be about Mongolian shamanism, but I've rescheduled for various reasons, partly because I hadn't done a proper Monster Man holiday special this year, and I wanted to make sure that I marked the season. So we are going to do a holiday special episode in which I talk about the myth and legend of Santa Claus. And because it is the season of giving, I'm going to make this episode available to everyone, including non-patrons. Our regular season, which is about Tengrism, the religion of medieval Central Asia, will return in the new year. So normally on this show, I talk about mythology and then I think about how to use that mythology in games. We've already covered the pantheons that are in the classic Deities and Demigods supplement. Well, there's one or two that we may go back to, but we've done all the real world main ones, except for the Arthurian one, which I can't be bothered with. And we've also done H.P. Lovecraft's Cthulhu Mythos. And we've taken a look at some mythologies that don't appear in that book as well. Santa Claus doesn't exactly fall into those kinds of categories. Or does he? You know, people talk about how superheroes are the American mythology, but I think that there's probably a lot more people at any given time who believe that Santa Claus is real than people who believe that Spider-Man is real, and there's definitely a lot more people who experience something like the numinous or the sacred when they think about Santa Claus than when they think about Spider-Man, even if now that I think about it, I'm kind of both. So who is Santa Claus and where does he come from? How can you use him in a game? What, in a word, is the deal with Santa Claus? I'm glad you asked. Actually, before we jump in, you may be saying to yourself, James, I can tell you grew up in America because you are saying Santa Claus and not Father Christmas. And you're right, I did. You know, even though my parents moved to the US from Britain, I grew up seeing Santa everywhere and not Father Christmas, and I don't think my parents particularly put any effort into maintaining a distinction. Because I want to propose that one of the things that is interesting about Santa Claus is what I'm going to call like the masks of Santa, or maybe the gift-giving character. There are so many that it's going to be really hard to go into them. In fact, I'm not gonna try, but there are loads. If you want to learn more about these various characters, I recommend the work of a writer and podcaster named Benito Sereno, and I'll try to remember to drop a link to his link tree down in the show notes. Benito Sereno says a lot of interesting things about folklore in general and the folklore of Christmas in particular. So if you're interested in Christmas customs from around the world, I recommend checking Benito's stuff out. I'm doing, you know, one 20-minute or so episode here, so I'm going to simplify and I'm going to focus on just a few examples. But if I had to generalize, I would say that quite a lot of European cultures, and then cultures elsewhere in the world that were colonized or otherwise influenced by European cultures, have a tradition in which a figure visits in winter distributing gifts. Most commonly, that figure is a man, usually bearded, often but not always identified with St. Nicholas of Myra, but it's not always. So for example, in some regions, it is the Christkind, the Christ child, who brings the gifts. Sometimes this gift giver gives gifts only to children, sometimes to both children and adults, sometimes he punishes naughty children, sometimes he has an assistant who does that. Sometimes he comes on a sleigh, sometimes on a horse, sometimes in a boat. The details are all different, but the gist is pretty similar. And here's the thing, because the gist is similar, those characters bleed easily into one another. To take two examples that actually aren't all that similar, Dutch St. Nicholas or Sinterklaas is pretty different from English Father Christmas. But when English and Dutch colonists met in New York, there was this cross-pollination of the two traditions. They were close enough to hybridize. Each group recognized that the other's character was clearly kind of the same as theirs, and the result was a distinctive fusion. Even though, if you look at the history of that fusion, it is actually a history of conflict, with a lot of early portrayals of Santa Claus being in ways that were kind of critical of the Dutch community. We'll return to this in a moment. But a new character came into being that incorporated elements of many different ones. And I think that ultimately, in many cultures, the Christmas gift giver is a mixture of influences. And if we want to think about its role in our kind of contemporary mythology, we have to understand that mixture of influences. So let's start with one of those influences, Saint Nicholas of Myra. Now, the historical St. Nicholas of Myra was a bishop from the 3rd and 4th centuries CE. Like a lot of people involved in the history of the early church, he was from somewhere that is in present-day Turkey, but at that time was part of the Roman Empire. Most of the stories that we have about him are later tales. That is pretty common for early Christian saints. So you may very well have heard the story in which St. Nicholas, while at a church conference, slaps a rival church leader, Arius, a heretic. At least according to St. Nicholas. Like I said, these stories are later additions, and saints are there to kind of model virtue for the reader of these later hagiographies rather than to be either historical accounts or fully rounded literary characters. But some saints do wind up being quite popular, and St. Nicholas was one of them. He's quite well liked in medieval Europe for various reasons, including the fact that he was one of the many patrons of sailors and travelers. In the 11th century, as the Seljuk Turks expanded into Asia Minor, some Italian merchants stole his relics and moved them from there to the town of Bari, except for some which wound up in Venice. It was a good couple of decades for guys from Bari stealing things, honestly, the late 11th century, but that is a story for another time. So the main connection between St. Nicholas and the figure of gift-giving is a story about how he once secretly aided three young women. There was a merchant who had three daughters, and he was hoping to provide dowries for all three of them so that they could get married. But thanks to the intervention of the devil, he had some bad luck in business and he was ruined. St. Nicholas heard of his misfortune and visited his house in secret on three subsequent nights, leaving three bags of gold. So from this story, St. Nicholas becomes associated not just with generosity, but with secret generosity. He's a character who comes in the night, leaving gifts unseen. Also, in some versions of the story, he leaves not three golden bags, but three golden balls, which is why the sign of a pawnbroker is three golden balls. I guess the idea being that a pawnbroker is also doing you a favor to lift you out of poverty, which is not, I think, the relationship most people have with pawnbrokers, but whatever. It's also supposedly why oranges are traditionally associated with St. Nicholas and therefore with Christmas, thus Terry's chocolate orange. And it's also why in the Netherlands, St. Nicholas is said to come from Spain, because I guess that's where oranges come from? It's hard to know how much to credit these connections. It makes sense that oranges would have been a Christmas treat in the pre-modern era. They would have been a much rarer treat for kids in Northern Europe in the era before refrigerated freight, although hardly unheard of. We know that oranges were a sort of a theater snack, so they can't have been outrageously expensive. Well, actually, theater snacks are outrageously expensive, aren't they? So, and the Netherlands' long history with Spain might explain why it, rather than Italy, where his remains were, or Turkey, where he was from, stood out as a place where the saint might visit from. And St. Nicholas's acts of secret generosity are not all that similar to riding into town on a horse while your assistants throw candy into the crowd. We can't, I don't think, find all that many direct connections between the mythology of St. Nicholas of Myra and modern-day Christmas gift-giving figures other than that basic idea of coming in the night to leave gifts unseen. So that means that the question is, was St. Nicholas the inspiration for the gift-giving figure? Or did his association with charity and generosity make him a good match for the gift-giving figure? Anyway, he's a fellow with a long white beard who loves to give gifts. That does feel like a pretty good match for Santa Claus as we understand him. Now, that's very true. But can I interest you in an alternative bearded wintry figure? I'm talking about Father Christmas. Now, Father Christmas is a bit of an outlier in the world of Christmas personifications. He starts to appear in England, I think, kind of in the Renaissance period, but to me, at least, he takes a recognizable form during the Commonwealth era. And you may have seen a famous print in which the Puritans are trying to keep old Christmas out of town. And this refers to an incident during the the period, I think, of the reign of the major generals, which was one of the numerous short-lived experiments with the new constitution that occurred during the period between 1649 and 1660, when England had no king. The idea was to curb the traditional Christmas celebrations, which were seen as rowdy and drunken and not befitting a pious and godly people. Father Christmas is depicted as bearded. He often wears a long, fur-trimmed robe. And I think the robe is meant to indicate, and he is often in other ways also portrayed as, kind of quaintly old-fashioned. It's hard to look at those things from historical periods because, of course, it's all quaintly old-fashioned to us, but the figure of Father Christmas evokes a nostalgic fondness for a perceived past. This idea of communal harmony, people living together, enjoying cakes and ale and a roaring fire. He is secular, right? He's not a saint. He's not particularly tied to a religious story other than the fact that he's a personification of a religious festival. I presume this is because he developed in an age of religious strife, and people who were already worried about Puritans banning their festivals didn't want to make them seem like they could have any connection to Catholicism or to forms of religion that Puritan leaders disapproved of. This has led to people identifying him as, like, quote-unquote pagan, because I think of the nature imagery. He has sort of a crown of holly sometimes. He often carries, like, a Yule log with him, and the lack of overt Christianity in the character. But I think that that's probably wrong. Father Christmas is a secular figure rather than a pagan one, at least to me. As a rule, I think when people try to tell you that something from the early modern era, or really from the high Middle Ages, is pagan in its origins, they tend to be skipping some steps. Not absolutely always, but generally. One important difference between Father Christmas, or Old Christmas as he's sometimes called, and Saint Nicholas is that although Father Christmas is sometimes portrayed as a gift giver, that's definitely not his main thing. His main thing is feasting. He carries a Yule log, he has a wassail bowl. I don't have time to talk about wassail, but just imagine that we're drinking hot, spiced something. It could be ale, it could be cider, it could be wine. It's a warming drink, typically associated with winter, and it's often drunk as part of a toast, often kind of like quasi-ritualized, often communal. Father Christmas is also concerned with Christmas dinner, with time spent with friends, and sort of like with drinking and partying. He's not especially associated with children. You can see this in A Christmas Carol, one of the classic depictions of Father Christmas, but it's not just the Father Christmas-like character of the spirit that visits Scrooge, but actually the whole portrayal of Christmas throughout the book is focused on the meal. The central feature of Christmas is the meal. When Scrooge sees his nephew, he's having a big meal with his family. When he looks in on the Cratchits, they're having their, like, poor little meal together, and there's a lot of focus on the turkey, everyone getting dressed up for it, the family visiting, right? Like, the Cratchits, is that the daughter comes back with her husband, all that kind of stuff. Gift giving is not particularly important, and the horrible thing that happens to Scrooge when he's young, when he's taken by the ghost of Christmas past, isn't that he doesn't get any presents or whatever, is that he's alone on Christmas. He has no one to celebrate with. I think you can actually see this even today in the different ways that British and American media portray Christmas, even though I would say that they have averaged out a good deal. Even if it's just that, like, portrayals of Christmas in Britain focus 60-40 on the dinner relative to the presents, and in America, it's the presents relative to the dinner. You know what I mean? Like, I think there are minor variations, but my feeling is that the British one is more still focused on food to a certain extent. So the thing that Father Christmas contributes to Santa Claus is his jolly persona. St. Nicholas can be quite an austere character. He's not necessarily fun and lovable. Father Christmas doesn't bring a switch to beat the naughty children with. He's not that concerned with the children in general, and he's certainly in favor of certain kinds of naughtiness. The jolly, friendly persona of Father Christmas goes into Santa Claus. However, one of the reasons that people feared these Christmas celebrations is that they had an element of, you know, Father Christmas is a little bit of a Lord of Misrule. I'm not saying completely, but maybe just because there's drunkenness. He's a little more destabilizing than affirming of the social order, at least in the eyes of England's 17th century Puritan elite, and according to historian Stephen Nissenbaum, the elite of sort of 19th century New York, says that the creation of the jolly, friendly Santa Claus was part of an attempt by New York's upper classes to sort of calm down Christmas celebrations and move them into the home. You know, Santa Claus is a domestic figure. Whereas these Christmas celebrations were a bit more like New Year celebrations today. So they're seen as an opportunity to get drunk and dance and flirt and do other things that the New York upper classes didn't really approve of. And where those things happened, then fights and other forms of disorder could follow. I think on this show I've said before, that this is also sort of basically where American Halloween comes from as well. The kind of kidification of a festival that was disapproved of at the time for being something that people did. They got drunk and they partied in the street, and it was, you know, immigrants were doing it, and the sort of like respectable American middle classes didn't like it, and it got changed into something that was more appealing to them. Father Christmas, I'm not saying he likes a drunken punch up, but he certainly likes a drink. Genial old Santa Claus with his milk and cookies or his Coca-Cola. Like, he likes a quiet night in by the fire. Although, having said that, when I was a kid, it was understood that you left whiskey for Santa Claus. But I believe that's not universal. But there are lots of other influences. The German tradition of the Christkindl being the gift giver has probably not contributed that much to the character of Santa Claus, as opposed to the broader German influence on Christmas traditions. The main influence of the Christkindl has been the name Kris Kringle to attach to Santa Claus. So I mentioned the idea that the sort of Santa Claus fusion emerges in the early 19th century. I think that's about right. Most of us are familiar with the poem A Visit from St. Nicholas, which is from like 1822, 1823. It was the night before Christmas and all through the house, that one. But there's also a poem from 1821 called Old Santa Claus with Much Delight, which describes Santa Claus, all one word, S-A-N-T-E-C-L-A-U-S. He's an old man. He travels in a sleigh drawn by reindeer on Christmas Eve, and he leaves presents in the stockings of good children. This is the first mention of the reindeer, I believe. And then, of course, in A Visit from St. Nicholas, we get names for the reindeer, which are then adopted into the kind of quote-unquote canon, but which are, as far as I know, just an invention of Clement Clark Moore, the author of A Visit from St. Nicholas. I believe it's by Clement Clark Moore. I think there may be some controversies with the authorship. Anyway, it's not important. However, the illustrations of Old Santa Claus with Much Delight have some similarity. He's a bearded man in a fur-lined coat, that's for sure. And in some of the illustrations, it's red. But it's going to be a little later on in Moore's poem and then in the cartoons of Thomas Nast that we get a Santa Claus who is recognizably the rotund, cheerful, red-cheeked, red-nosed figure that we know so well. And having said that, I called Clement Clark Moore's stuff a description of Santa Claus, but of course he's not describing Santa Claus, he's describing St. Nicholas. And there's room for variation. Wizard of Oz author L. Frank Baum wrote The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus, and his Santa Claus is a completely different character who's attempting to get his immortality approved by a council of immortal wizards. However, one of the points that I want to make is that a lot of European Christmas gift-giver traditions are actually being shored up around this same time. You know, a lot of what people think of as the quote-unquote authentic or quote-unquote original European versions of the tradition are of roughly the same date or only slightly earlier. As with many Euro-American differences, we're really looking at traditions splitting into two forms or combining as immigrants from those parts of Europe move to North America, and their traditions change over time, and then the traditions that they left behind also change. A tradition splitting into two forms rather than how it's often depicted, which is Europeans preserving and Americans commercializing. Almost any story that tells you, like, that a mythical figure derives from a single thing, and this, I think, is, like, the origin of these stories you'll hear about how, like, oh, Coca-Cola created Santa Claus and that's why he's red and white. Certainly, the artist Haddon H. Sundblom was an important influence on the kind of shared picture of Santa Claus. He was much imitated, but he didn't create that image of Santa Claus unless he had a time machine. Anyone who tells you that it is one thing, or that a celebration represents one specific thing, is probably wrong, right? They're complicated. Anyway, what has any of this got to do with Dungeons & Dragons, or other fantasy role-playing games? I think, actually, there are some connections. And I'll start with the general and move to the particular. First, and most broadly, I submit that Santa Claus / Father Christmas / Kris Kringle / St. Nicholas / whoever is a lot more like a deity in a historical polytheistic culture than most modern religions are, and is a lot more like what deities in a fantasy setting ought to be like than they typically are. What I mean is that he has a number of connected sources. They're obviously shared elements, but crucially, there is no one who cares about orthodoxy. So in the 21st century, most American Santas share the majority of their elements. They live at the North Pole, they have reindeer, they got a workshop full of elves, they're married to Mrs. Claus. Again, a character who dates back to at least the 1890s. But they don't have to, and you don't have to go far to find a lot of variation. And although there are some people who are willing to let their ideas about national characteristics or whatever be expressed through their views on Santa Claus, in general, no one is going to call you a heretic. They're not going to say, oh no, Santa doesn't live at the North Pole, St. Nicholas lives in Spain, and he doesn't show up on the 25th, he shows up on the 6th, and whatever, you know. They're just understood as related but not identical traditions. Tell people about how you visualize Santa Claus, and more often than not, they'll just tell you about how they visualize Santa Claus. Which means that if we have a paladin of St. Nicholas and a cleric of Santa Claus in the same party, they may have very different views of their deity. They may even have views that are conflicting, but I don't know that they will have views that are exclusive. And I think that that would be pretty typical of, like I've mentioned before, that in the Roman world, you find, I can think of at least one healing spring devoted to Mars, the war god. Now that seems a little off-brand, but different regions, different locations, often quite small areas, have quite distinct traditions about the gods, and yet understand them as part of a shared cosmology. I think in general it's what a lot of this stuff is like, and for that matter what a lot of gaming is like, right? A lot of influences go into the pot, and when people take a bowl, what they get is always going to be slightly different. Second, I think it's interesting to see, actually something that I didn't talk about very much in this episode, which is that the gift giver figure has an open slot for another character, the gift giver's assistant. In northern France, that could be Père Fouettard, the Heavy. Often Santa's assistant is a bad cop, like the Krampus, the one who goes around punishing the naughty children. In the US, it's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and the elves. In Russia and other parts of Eastern Europe, we're not talking about Santa Claus, but about Grandfather Frost, Died Mraz or Morozko. He's not the same as Santa Claus, but he pretty clearly fits into a similar role. And around the same time, I think it'd be very hard to argue that he's not influenced by European traditions about St. Nicholas. Not in the origin of the character, who predates those, but in how he is portrayed. And he's often accompanied by a female helper character who would be his daughter or granddaughter. So I do like the idea that you could have a deity in a game who is relatively consistent from culture to culture, but who has different helpers or disciples in different regions. You know, as the faith of this deity spread, they knew that they couldn't sort of alter the main deity's characteristics, but they associated a character that a deity that they already had with this new outside faith. Finally, I think that in a game that's whimsical enough, you probably could have a cleric of Santa Claus. I mean, you imagine some kind of Thundar the Barbarian style post-apocalyptic future, I think it makes sense that Santa would be an aspirational figure. In a harsh landscape, a world of scarcity, his virtues of comfort, generosity, hospitality, and providing for and reinforcing the bonds of the community would be highly valued. And I think one can imagine his followers sort of going on pilgrimages between these scattered communities on this mission to, you know, bring toys and spread Christmas cheer, which would be a pretty challenging task to undertake in this kind of post-apocalyptic landscape. We're just about out of time for today's episode, and I haven't even talked about the idea that this figure, the gift giver, represents, you know, one of a number of sort of common folk customs that you find in all different communities, but in all different forms. And what's unusual about this one is the extent to which it has these shared elements and overlaps. A topic for another time, I suppose. But I think that it's one of the few instances that we sort of all, if not share, at least have some access to and know about, of a phenomenon that would once have been much more common in terms of the way that people thought about religion and mythology. Plus also, it's Christmas and I wanted to talk about Santa Claus. In the new year, as I said, we'll be returning to our ongoing series on Tengrism, and then all the patrons at the $2 or higher level will be able to vote on a theme for the new season. But Monster Man will be taking next week off between Christmas and New Year. Every year I do this to give myself a little break. I'm sure you can hear that my voice is a little hoarse right now. But before I go, I wanted to take a moment to say that 2022 has been a year of great success for Monster Man and for my gaming writing efforts generally. It's been, as always, tremendously rewarding to talk to listeners and members of the community. I've learned a lot, as always, from our conversations, and it's really nice. All the people that I get to talk to online and see all the fun and creative things that they're doing. I'm always a little surprised, but it's always tremendously rewarding how much people seem to appreciate the show. It's great to be able to share my junk drawer of a brain with people who hopefully get something fun out of it. I was never a Christmas person when I was younger. I mean, I liked it the same as everybody else did, but as I get older, I have turned into a right jolly old elf. Definitely one of those people. So whether you are or not, no matter what holiday you celebrate, from all of us here at Monster Man, which I guess is really just me, Allison, and the dog, here's wishing you and the people that you care about a safe and happy holiday season and a bright new year. Thanks for listening, and happy holidays.